Hello and welcome to Wine Blast. I'm Susie Barry and I'm here on the mics and the bottles with my husband and fellow master of wine, Peter Richards. And this episode is all about how to build your own wine collection at home.
So we had a question in from Stephen in Belfast about what to buy if you want to drink well but you haven't got lots of ideal space at home. And it really got us thinking, didn't it?
It did indeed. It also got us arguing a bit.
Thanks,
because
Stephen.
There are clearly different ways of going about this, shall we say. But it's a great question because we know a lot of people do have this issue. So we are going to be sharing our tips and advice. We even went as far as to do a mini stock take of our own at-home wine collection.
Yeah, it was a bit scary, wasn't it?
It was. But we're revealing the gory details of that too.
We'll also be hearing from two experts on the subject. Nathan Hill, a physicist and space technologist by training, but he also moonlights as a founding partner in online wine club and merchant Honest Grapes. Also from Alexander Duval, who runs Bacchus Concierge, an independent advisor on building wine collections. It's a great show, even though I say it myself. You know, loads of helpful, useful advice, way more useful than we normally are, I think. It's kind of self-help wine stars, the way I'm thinking of it, but maybe not one for fans of Marie Kondo.
No. Declutterers like me probably won't really welcome this one, though I am determined. I haven't said this. I'm determined wine collections can be neat and tidy.
Yeah, good luck with that one.
Delicious clutter, neatly arranged. That's the aim.
I didn't see that coming. That's where we're going with this episode.
That's where we're going.
Right.
It's where we're going with our collection, I'm afraid.
It kind of sums up the show. Just thinking about that phrase, does it sum up the show? You know, delicious clutter, neatly done.
I like it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right. So on that note, you see where I'm going with this. You know, we wanted to mention that the show marks not only our 40th episode, but also our 1 year anniversary of launching Wine Blast Podcast.
Now that's a bigger woohoo.
I know. Yeah, there we are. We got the Instagram reminder, didn't we? The pop-up the other day. Those things can be terrifying or thrilling in equal measure.
Good or bad.
You never quite know what you're going to get. It's quite worrying. But yeah, I can't believe it's been a year. Really.
No, I know. Well, it's sort of, I mean, it does feel like quite a while since we started it, but it's been a strange year, I guess, for
everybody. It's been a weird old year, hasn't
long
it?
But yeah,
I think we just wanted to say thank you. Thank you for listening. Mm-hmm. Thank you for supporting, tuning in, chatting to us on social media, sending us in your questions, leaving lovely reviews, positive ratings.
Yeah, I mean, please keep them coming if you can. We do really appreciate it. Mm. Your lovely supportive messages, they've really buoyed us and I think kept us going. I mean, so what started off as a bit of a fun sideline, a lockdown hobby, if you like, has now become a serious undertaking, hasn't it, for us? And we love it. We love it.
We
and
do.
your support lets us do it. So thank you.
Indeed. And at the risk of being gauche and blowing the own trumpet.
Go gauche.
Am I allowed to do this?
But can I'll stop you when I think you've gone too far.
I did want to mention a couple of recent reviews. mainly just say thank you for the kind people who've sent the reviews. We do appreciate it. So thank you to Jared for saying that Wine Blast is on fire. I hope not literally.
Need
to check the kitchen.
Kids play with matches.
Jared said, learning so much, and you told me not to say this next bit, but, and they're so funny.
I can guarantee. No, I should have used reverse psychology, shouldn't I?
Yeah, you
said, go on, shout it out.
I mean, they're definitely not going to be funny now that you've said that, Jared. Thanks to the two Lucys for saying, loving your podcast. Keep the fab episodes coming. And lastly, thanks Rico also for calling our podcast fun, dynamic, filled with awesome tips and information. You two were definitely my big inspiration to pursue my own path in the wine world. And now my new business is in the works. There we go.
So there you go. There you go. Obviously, we are a very bad influence, the kind of podcasters parents should probably warn you about.
Yeah, we should come with a rating.
If you spend too long with us, you'll be abandoning any pretense of an upstanding life and throwing it all away in search of a career drinking wine all day.
Yeah, which is, coming to think about it, you know, very opposite of upstanding, isn't it? It's positively horizontal. That's where we'll get you.
Anyway, moving on. didn't you have something you wanted to say about food before we get going? Is that right?
Oh, yeah, right. So a few episodes ago, we asked for and featured some of your weirdest food and wine pairings, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
A bit unsettling, but fun, I think. We had a few last minute submissions that didn't quite make it on, and which I thought were unmissable, so we've just got to get them in.
That's what you were wanting. Yeah, oh dear, yeah. That's what you wanted to talk about. I'm slightly concerned.
Yeah, be very
go
afraid.
On. Go.
Just two things to share. The first weird wine and food matching is from someone identifying themselves as wine trade flunky. Which maybe should ring alarm
bells. Have alerted us.
From the beginning. But anyway, Wine Trade Flunky wrote, a bottle of red burgundy, forget which, washed down with a horse's testicle pie in a creamy sauce and puff pastry crust in a restaurant in Bone in 1992. I had, in fact, helped my host castrate a horse the day before and had no idea what he'd ordered me for lunch.
Oh, you should not have read that out.
Sorry.
I need to yeah. look at what you're reading before
Apologies.
You read it.
Apologies.
Although actually, no, sorry, I've just got to say something. I did actually once have, it's brought it all back to me. I did once have testicles in a tapas bar in Spain.
You had testicles in a tapas bar in Spain?
Well, I ate testicles. I didn't know I was eating testicles until I was eating them and somebody told me, but they were fine. We will go no further.
I don't know how to respond to that as
no.
your husband.
Well, there we go.
No. Okay, so let's move on then. I think we might come back
They've
to that.
They've been removed.
Actually. We might come back to that. And there might be some off-air interactions.
I
anyway.
Now got a frog in my throat. I'm so overwhelmed.
Sorry. Anyway, the other one came from Risto Talas, who flagged up Makarashoti, which he describes as the most Finnish drink ever created, for which you need sausage, sinappi, mustard, and vodka. You cut out a piece of sausage. You make a hole in it with a spoon. You fill it with vodka. You squeeze the mustard onto your hand like you do with salt when slamming tequila. You lick the mustard and drink the vodka from the sausage. Then you eat the sausage. According to the recipe, it will have a great vodka marinated taste.
The mind boggles.
I suppose it's not pure wine and food match, is it? So it just shouldn't really qualify. But I think we just put it in there because it was just shocking.
Yeah, well, it might be, but I think it's time to raise the tone. So actually get on with the episode and the subject at hand. So let's hear from Stephen.
Hi, Susie and Peter. Congratulations on a great podcast. Really enjoying it, especially when there's very little to enjoy at present. I wondered, had you any thoughts on how to build a wine collection at home to ensure you drink wine at the right time? Finding space for a wine collection is difficult, and I have to make do with a wine fridge and some premium space under the stairs. Do you recommend any must-haves for a collection? And do you stock up on good vintages? Do you think it's better to buy cases of one wine you really enjoy, or buy 3 to 4 bottles of a different wine to build variety? We'd be really interested in your thoughts. Keep up the great work. Many thanks, Stephen McCallan from Belfast.
Thanks, Stephen, also for the kind words. So I think the first thing to clarify is that collecting wine at home is a very different thing to wine investment, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is where you buy in the hope of selling it later at a higher price. We often have people telling us, don't we, I've got this old, amazing old bottle which I found at the back of the boiler room, you know, what's it worth? And the answer is always the same. No, not a lot.
Not a lot, no.
Because wine investment is all about provenance or storage. Because obviously, you know, if this is lovely wine and it's been stored, you want to know where it's been stored. If it's been stored in a rubbish place, it's going to be worthless. Mm. And the best place to do that is professionally, you know, external, outside the home, with a wine merchant, not at home. So they're the two very different things.
They are different, and we've had quite a few questions in about wine investment, and we may come on to that in a future episode. But in the meantime, coming back to Stephen, it's a good question because most wine drinkers find themselves in this situation at some stage in their wine journey, and there are definitely things to do and not to do. So I think it's well worth asking for a bit of advice.
But I think it's equally important to stress, you know, from the outset that a collection sounds like a fixed thing. But it's not. Mm. You know, wine's constantly changing in the bottle. Our personal tastes evolve over time as well. So, you know, it's not about coming up with what you might term sort of the ultimate solution here. It's more like kind of, it's an ongoing thing. It's a changing thing. It's more like, I don't know, managing a team or, you know, choosing a bunch of mates to go on a long trip with. You know, some things will work out at one time, others won't at another. But the idea is that the overall experience will be worth it, you know, certainly better than the sum of its parts individually, if that makes sense.
I think you've lost me. But perhaps it's time to hear from someone else. Our first guest, Nathan Hill. Nathan is chairman of Honest Grapes, the online wine merchant club and event specialist that won Outstanding Retailer at last year's Decanter Retail Awards, didn't it, which you chair?
I did. Just a great wine list, really. Mm-hmm. We were really, really impressed. Yeah. And just a really sort of engaging and upbeat approach to wine.
And
sustainability, actually. But anyway,
Nathan isn't your average wino. He's a scientist and a space technologist by training.
How cool is that?
I know. And he's invested in many companies, but wine is a passion. And he himself started out by building a modest wine collection at home.
You see where these things lead, Stephen. You've got to be careful.
You'll running our own wine business. So anyway, we wanted to get his take, and I began by asking him how he got started.
So I started collecting wine probably a long time ago, about 25 years ago. Literally using a cupboard under the stairs. And so I was living in Germany, first of all, and then I moved back to the UK. And I really wanted to get beyond the sort of student thing, I guess, at the time of just buying bottles and popping them that evening. And I realized how much more fun I would have by allowing wine to mature a bit, enjoy it a bit later. So that's really how I got started, was just investigating.
And what advice would you give to people now, based on that, that people who want to start or improve their wine collection at home?
So the first thing I decide is my cupboard suitable? And for about £6.50, you can buy the thing that you need, which will tell you the maximum and minimum temperature and the humidity of the cupboard. Because if it's basically, you ideally want a temperature around about 12 degrees, but it doesn't matter exactly, as long as it's not bouncing up and down too much, not freezing in the winter or boiling in the summer. And the humidity, ideally around 65%. If it's too dry, the corks will dry out, and so your cupboard won't be suitable and you'll need to store somewhere else. And then most importantly, can you resist the temptation to drink the stuff that you've just bought? The average bottle in the UK, I think surveys say, is drunk within 4 hours of being bought. What this is about, if your greatest pleasure is from drinking Ulco Pops and Ribena, and you just want sort of sweet fruity wines, then you don't really need to spend your time developing a collection. Developing a collection is like it is a collecting sort of thing, a lovely thing of nurturing a collection. But it's also about having wine which will become more savoury, more complex, more interesting as it gets older.
And in terms of that, would you suggest then that people buy 12 bottle cases? Or do you think it's more interesting to, say, buy three or four wines, but of different wines?
So what I did is, once I worked out how many spaces I've got bottles for, sorry, bottles I've got spaces for, which in my case was about 60 or so, I sort of divided it up into three lots. The first lot I called rotation. And what I mean by that is that there are lots of wines which just benefit from looking after them for a year or two. At the time, I was drinking a lot of Mâcon wines, so Southern Burgundian wines, Mâconnais and Côte Chalonnais and Italian wines. And just having an extra year or two of bottle age, you can get lovely savoury notes and enjoy the texture and flavour of those as they evolve. I definitely recommend buying in sixes. Avoid 12s wherever you can if you're having a small collection like 60 bottles. But buy sixes of things you like. Why do that? Firstly, people like me, like Honest Grapes, appreciate it if you buy things by the case. You'll generally get better prices. You'll have the chance to try the same wine over different times as it evolves a bit in its maturity. And it's also better for the environment. So you're not packing and unpacking cases and putting them together. So part one for me was literally just what I call rotation. I buy things that I like drinking every day, but I can afford to keep for, let's say, a year or two at that sort of level. So I'm talking here about wines from about £12 to £25 or so. So above the basic supermarket level, which aren't really worth keeping most of the time. My second part is then a bit of luxury. And then I'd wait for the new season releases and see if I could afford something. Maybe a bit, for me, Burgundy and Italian wines, a bit of Bordeaux, that I can afford to keep a bit longer. And those bit of luxuries, I just buy the six and try to avoid the temptation to pull them out too early. And then my third section is oddments. And I'd find the bin end sales of people who had nice older wine, because the older wine that merchants have isn't rubbish. It's just generally odd bottles they've got left with. They've paid to store it. And so you can have wines that are a year or two or three years older and drink the odd bottle of those to see how wines you enjoy will evolve. And that was a great way. I've still got bottles of Bordeaux from the 1980s that I picked up in sales where people were just emptying their lines and doing 10% off or something.
And in terms of your kind of your luxury section, particularly, I would say, do you think it's particularly important to buy from good vintages, or would you advise people perhaps with a limited budget to, say, look for a good producer, but in a lesser vintage?
I think, oh God, that's too difficult. I think it's a bit of both. To be honest, though, I'd say if you're completely starting afresh, I'd actually think about the regions you're buying from as much as the vintages. To give you an example, Italian wines are often sold 3 or 4 years older than the equivalent French wines. So San Leonardo in Trentino that we sell, we've just released the 2016, whereas Burgundy we're selling 2019. In a few weeks, we'll be selling Bordeaux 2020. Not only has a 2016 wine from Italy been stored for longer, but it's had longer to evolve in the correct cellar conditions, and the critics will have reviewed it and everything. And so, to be honest, for the same price, you're getting a better deal in Italy or Spain or Portugal than you are. As much as I love France, France is not necessarily the place to get bargain wines.
And talking about what you have in your collection, do you think there are any absolute must-haves in an at-home collection?
The stuff you enjoy drinking. I really hate it when people just buy show-off wines and they've said they've spent far too much money and they're scared to drink it. So for me, I'm a huge collector of Village Burgundy and Grosses Gewächs, Grand Cru level German wines, a lot of which is at the for me an affordable drinking level, 15, 20, 25 pounds. But I've got the benefit of having stored it for a few years. Once you get past those first 2 years of sitting on your hands and not drinking stuff, I can now enjoy drinking Burgundy that would be very hard to find, a lot more expensive, and I can pull it out and not be embarrassed about it. So I've got great Bourgogne Rouge and things like that, which are just a pleasure to drink now.
Now, so you talk about buying things that you like, but how can people reconcile a bit of experimenting with sticking to what they know and love? What's the best way to sort of strike a balance in that sense?
Well, I'm going to say join a club like Honest Face, but it could be any decent wine merchant. We do about 250 wine therapy online events a year. So we've got loads of opportunities to taste wines, sending wines out in little samples and having the time to taste them. Post-pandemic, of course, we go back to doing those as real meats, as it were. I think for me, having a good sommelier wine salesperson to look after you from a wine club, joining a cellar plan where you put in a bit each month shows them that you're serious and you're putting a bit aside to collect things when they come out, and then joining tastings. For me, joining tastings then gives me the confidence to buy six of something.
And how can people, looking back at what you said about, you know, having your three sections of your cellar, how can people know that they're drinking their wines at the right time?
You can't really, because a lot of it's about your personal taste. I like my wines to have a good forward fruit. I don't like the old-fashioned British tradition of letting it all go old and brown and stewy. I like my wine fresh and vibrant, but with some level of maturity. So that's another reason to buy in sixes, Susie, that you can taste the first one and then think, oh, that's how long I need to wait. Decent wines, you can find review websites, which will also give you drinking windows. And also your wine club, like us, like Honest Grapes, will tell you honestly, oh, I had one of these the other week. It's now, yeah, a 2017 Bourgogne Rouge. Oh, that'll taste nice now. So getting that sort of down low information from people is really helpful.
Nathan, thank you so much. It's been really lovely talking to you.
It's been a pleasure. And I'd say to anybody, Susie, get started collecting. See if you can sit on your hands for a year or two while you let a bit of that lovely plant mature.
Sitting on your hands is the hardest thing to do. I love that, isn't it? It's so true. Patience with wine. But actually, when you get going with these things, it becomes easy and it's really, really fun.
Yeah,
and
you
see the results. But first things first, Nathan talked about where to store your wine collection. Stephen, you mentioned under the stairs. And I think, generally speaking, not bad. You know, it's better than a garage or a shed or the kitchen, which is where a lot of people store their wine. You know, you ideally want somewhere dark and quiet, relatively stable temperature. Stable is really important there. Some degree of humidity if you can. But you have to say, we all talk about these things, that's actually quite rare to find in a house, isn't it?
And equally, yes, it is actually.
What we wanted to add, therefore, is it's not the end of the world if you don't have all those things.
No, no.
Is it?
I mean, that is really important to say. Mm. Having quite extreme fluctuating temperature isn't ideal because why? Well, because it can destroy some of the finer nuances of the wine. So particularly if it's a delicate style. Mm. But what it mainly means is that wines will just evolve faster, especially if it's a warm temperatures.
Yeah.
And so you can just take that into account and drink the wines sooner than if they'd been stored in the perfect conditions, which would effectively, if we look at perfect conditions, they'd effectively be a constant 12 degrees in a semi-humid underground cellar.
Yeah, but,
who's got that?
Exactly,
you know, very few
really
people.
Have.
Some
so,
do,
yeah.
But not many people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think humidity is one of the key ones, isn't it? Because often that's what you don't have in a house. So yes, corks can dry out, but to be honest, that's relatively rare. And it usually happens over a long period of time.
Very long period of time.
So, you know, you might need to check on these things. But generally, the wine in the bottle and the humidity in the headspace that's between the cork and the wine will keep the bottom of the cork moist enough to retain the integrity of the seal, unless it's extreme conditions.
Or you buy screw caps.
Well said, actually. You know, lots of fine wines have screw caps, and you don't have to worry about this whole thing. You know, we've got quite a lot of wines in our collection that are screw cap and very, very fine.
They tend to be New World, don't they?
Exactly. New Zealand, Australia, I would have said mainly. But, you know, fridges can be very drying. That's worth remembering. They're a very, very drying atmosphere. So, you know, unless it's a wine fridge with humidity controls, you don't want to be keeping wines in the fridge for too long either, because they will dry things out. And one other thing to say is, you know, wine doesn't actually need to be stored on its side. Storing wine on its side is more practical, but a lot of people say you have to store it on the side because it keeps the end moist. Actually, that's not necessarily the case.
So, but Stephen's question, though, let's go back to that, because it's less about the place, which most people don't have much choice about, do they? And it's more about the wines. But just one final point to make on space is that if you really think you don't have ideal storage space for your wine collection at home, as we said earlier, you can go for professional storage via a wine merchant, and that will have an annual charge, and you just get it delivered as and when you want to keep it at home or drink it.
There's a charge for delivery.
Or you could sign up for a subscription service where you get your drinking wines delivered on a regular basis.
Yeah, yeah. And I think
Honest Grapes keep any at home.
Yeah, Honest Grapes do both those things, don't they?
Yeah.
And they also do tasting events, so you can try the wines first, which I think is important. And I guess, you know, moving more into the wines, which, as you said, was what Stephen was asking about, you know, we'd happily recommend Honest Grapes. But there are loads of really good wine merchants out there to choose from, most of whom offer exactly these kind of services, which you've mentioned. You know, James Nicholson near Belfast, Stephen.
Which might be appropriate for Stephen.
Yeah. Bigger ones like, you know, Berry Brothers and Rudd, Corny and Barrow, Wine Society, Tanners, you know, or smaller local independent merchants, maybe ones nearer you. You know, you can check out the results of the Decanter Retailer Awards, which you mentioned. Some really good local merchants highlighted there. Yeah. Or just ask around your friends locally and, you know, there'll be options.
I think that's it. So having a decent relationship with a local wine merchant is a really good way to build your collection and have some fun while you're doing it.
Yeah.
But there is also another way of going about it. And I asked Alex Duval, who runs the Independent Wine Advisory Service Bacchus Concierge, if he had any must-have recommendations.
I was hoping you're going to ask me this, and I've been going through my own wine collection to decide. I think one of the first ones I would always go for, I think Bordeaux is always an excellent starting point. And I love good under the radar Bordeaux. For me, a really good one is Chateau Saint-Jacques from the Orpadoc. It's a producer which is actually made, and the actual wine is made by the producers and winemakers at Léoville Poitiers, a second growth producer. Always gets 90 plus points, and it's really good value for money at less than £20. That's really good value for money. Also, Rioja is really excellent value. Only last year, La Rioja Alta brought on out their Vino Ardanza Especial from 2010. It received rave reviews, and as I'm sure as you know, great Rioja, especially Grand Reserva Rioja, can go on for decades.
I was going to say, we actually bought some of that ourselves. So yes, we've got that in our cellar, absolutely.
There we go. I mean, and this is something I love talking to people about. I love finding out what is under the radar, what is really good value for money, so I can really impart that on someone so that they know they are getting the very best that their budget can get, that their lifestyle can afford as well. And I just love talking to people about wine.
And what about where to store your wines? If you don't have a cellar, I mean, a lot of people don't have a cellar. They may not have a particularly appropriate place for wines. Where would you say to store them?
Somewhere dry, somewhere that is not warm, so room temperature or below, and definitely does not have any bright light, just to allow the wine to settle. Now, at the same time, if you have wine which is which you have bought, say, en primeur, or you have in cases, I would always say to put that away in professional storage, somewhere like Octavian, somewhere like Vinotech or London City Bond, because then you know that when you do get it on out, it is going to be at its absolute best.
And I know, I mean, I think you work with London City Bond, don't you? What kind of cost does that incur for a buyer?
I've set up accounts with all of those major wine storage companies. So in terms of cost, they work up on different bands usually. So usually per per case. It's about £6-7 a case plus VAT. And it gradually goes on down with the more cases you actually buy. So in reality, you're saving money as you put wines away.
And that's an annual charge, isn't it?
They are usually annual charges, yes. Either every 6 months or every 12 months.
So in terms of what you offer at Bacchus Concierge, just tell me, why would someone come to you rather than simply going to a retailer or an online merchant who might also kind of offer advice on building a collection?
Well, Bacchus Concierge was set on up with the sole purpose of working for the customer themselves. I'm a specialist wine consultation service. And what I'm doing is I'm filling a gap in the market, which I found that when people want to collect wine, what they really desire is independent knowledge from someone. Someone who can actually sit on down with them and say, what is it you want to collect? What is your lifestyle? What is your budget, most importantly, as well? What can you afford?
You work with more modest collections and sellers as well as the big budget options. I think your subscription service starts at £100 a month. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. No, I've tailored it, and it's completely tailored to the customer. So it's what they can afford. So not only do I buy through Berry Brothers, maybe Corney and Barrow, but I also buy from smaller producers. And I've just recently opened an account with Yap Brothers as well. So I'm trying to find wines which suit the customer in particular. So not necessarily buying top end wines, buying wines which suit the client. So if it's a wine which is tucked away around the corner from, say, a Petrus or a Trottoir Noir, I want to go out and find it because I love giving great value for money wines and tips to customers.
That's fantastic, Alex. Alex, thank you so much.
No, I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Now, we should add that Alex has made a very kind offer to you guys, our lovely listeners. Mm. If you sign up to Bacchus Concierge for 3 months, all your money, and it starts at £100 a month, I think, as we've probably mentioned before, will go directly into buying the wine. Usually there's a 5% service charge for sourcing the wines, but Alex is waiving that during your 3 month trial. And after that, you can decide whether you want to carry on or not. So that's for the first 10 Wine Blast listeners to contact him at bacchusconcierge.com.
Yeah. Now, I think at this stage, I feel we need to summarize, pull things together a little bit, distill what Nathan
and organize and arrange. Tidily.
America's turning into a Marie Kondo podcast. Anyway, sort of summarize everything and our own thoughts, specifically in response to Stephen's questions, which I think is what he wanted the answers to. So first up, what quantity to buy in?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think we would say buy sixes for wines you really like, because then you've got enough to enjoy, and you can try them over a period of time.
Yeah.
But you can buy threes or fours, even the odd bottle to experiment with, or, you know, or if it's a bit special and very expensive, or even sometimes it might need to be an odd bottle if it's a bin end. So, I mean, your collection is about variety, or it needs to be about variety, which means you can cater then for different moods, different guests, different foods. And I think the important thing here is we would really say, on the whole, don't buy in 12 bottle cases your own drinking.
Lots of wines come in sixes now, don't they? But I don't think there should be any hard and fast rule about that, Stephen. I think if it's a wine you really, really like, yes, buy six, because you'll be disappointed if you just buy a couple and then you run out. And that way, as you say, you can try them over time. That's really, really important.
But what about the is it good to buy the best vintages? What do we think on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think personally, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we'd recommend good producers in lesser vintages. Which means you're getting better value often. Yeah. And the wines can age just as well. They're often just as good or rewarding.
Yeah.
But you're just not paying that extra price for them. Alex mentioned Bordeaux 2011 and 14 to us when we were chatting. But, there are plenty of examples.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go for lesser producers in good vintages, like Bordeaux 9, 10 or 15, 16 or Piedmont 2016.
I think good producers, though, would be our first port of call, wouldn't it? Now, we should say at this moment, we're not talking about investing here. This is the opposite of what you do to invest. With investing, you buy blue chip producers in great vintages. Yeah, yeah. that's the way you do it. Yeah. But you know, this is not about investing. It's about canny buying to drink well over a long period of time.
Getting a great name out on the table is really impressive. Yeah. You know, if it's lesser vintage, it doesn't matter so much. Yeah. And more kudos to you if you've got a great producer in a so-called lesser vintage, but which is actually delicious.
Or one of their lesser wines in a lesser vintage. You know, so Bourgogne Blanc, say, in a lesser vintage from a top producer.
Yeah, or though you could go for the lesser wine in a better vintage, which you know can equally deliver good value if it's still it's good value. It's about tasting.
So what we're really saying is, on the whole, we probably wouldn't go for the top wines from the top producers and the top vintages.
I think top vintages. No, I think that's where canny buying comes in. That's where your merchant comes in, or tasting helps.
Right.
What about talking about vintages? Drinking wine at the right time. This is an interesting question.
So hard, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, as anybody would say, especially as you grow your collection. I mean, we would honestly say just keep trying bottles. Obviously, consult guides. There are loads of guides out there, certainly for the classic wines, classic vintages. There's merchant. You can ask your merchant. You can look online. And I think fair enough, except you're going to get it wrong sometimes.
That's true, actually. You will get it wrong. I mean, there's nothing more devastating than a beautiful wine that's gone over the hill. You've missed it.
Yeah.
So,
and equally, can I just say, you know, we would agree that you like wines a bit older than I do. So that's personal taste as well. So what is my perfect drinking window might be slightly different to yours.
Was that specific to me and you, or generally speaking?
But it is.
Do I prefer wines older than you?
I think you do.
Oh, maybe I do.
I think you do.
Okay, we discussed that really.
Often you'll say it's still young, and I'm saying it's either just ready or it's over the hill. You know, that's a little bit personal. So the taste.
It is very personal, that thing. And, but I think that's this is the beauty, and it's what Nathan mentioned. This is the beauty of a wine collection. Yeah. You get to try wines when they are evolved, when they're maturing, and you just need to decide for yourself where you like to drink wines.
So on to classics or alternatives. Would we go for the classics or alternatives to them?
I think absolutely. Personally, I think we like the alternatives. I mean, it's partly our job, isn't it? You know, we love flagging up hidden gems. We love to find these kind of offbeat wines, which are just as delicious as the classics, but just a little bit different. You know, and I think we love serving them to people because they're quite eye-opening. You know, you serve it to people and they say, wow, this is amazing. You might serve it to them blind initially, not in a bad way, but just to get, you know, if they say, wow, this is amazing, what is it? And then you pull out this bottle, which is from some weird and wonderful place. That's really, really great. I mean, you know, we love what we do. I mean, Dog Point Chardonnay, you know, as an alternative
that
to White Burgundy.
That is just an amazing alternative to White Burgundy.
Super undiscovered at the moment, but it's just absolutely delicious.
But
you know,
it's still a great alternative.
Dry River Syrah, which you love as an alternative to sort of Cote Roti.
And that's not a cheap wine. Neither of these are cheap wines, but in our world, they offer amazing value when you compare them to the classics at the same level.
Totally. And I think, you know, the best way to find those, probably the ones that appeal to your taste, is you've got to go to tastings for that, because that gives you the confidence to buy them. Obviously, lots of tastings at the moment, but you know, people like Honest Grapes are doing virtual tastings where they send you out little samples which you can try. So I think, you know, I think that's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
What about what to buy?
Well,
then?
That follows
you know,
on, doesn't it? What to buy, you know.
But
wine is very personal. So it's about finding what you like. And as you say, you can do that through tastings. And probably what your guests might like, which may be slightly different.
Point,
you've got a grand gang of people to please.
Yeah.
You know, you might be going for something different
which
to a wine that
you
just
love.
You're
not always drinking these things by yourself, are you? So you've got to think about, which we often do when we're buying. It's not just about our wacky and weird taste, but what people will like who we serve them to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. And also just not be afraid to experiment. You know, have a go with something. You know, maybe ask a merchant to give you a little bit less risk. Ask your local merchant, you know, if I like this, will I like this? But, you know, generally have a little go with things. You know, how wrong can you go?
It's got to be, you know, if you're enthusiastic giving someone a wine, then other people will like it too. So
I think so.
You know, we come back to the concept of must-haves, which is what Stephen asked about. Of course, it's relative in this sense. You go for what you like. But, you know, I suppose, you know, this is where we come back to our cellar. Stephen, you're asking us. So this is where we start sharing, you know, what did we find in our own cellar? What did we really buy?
Well, I mean, the truth is we'd never really look at our cellar, do we? So this forced us, Stephen, thank you, to look at what we've got in there. And the first thing to say was it was a bit of a mess. But in terms of priorities within the home, you know, wine is such an important part, certainly, of our life.
Yeah, so we're not going to be specific here, but we wanted to share this. We're lucky enough to have space in the house for somewhere around 1,200 bottles, I think, don't we?
We sort of work worked that out, didn't we?
Yeah, which was eye-opening when we worked it. We hadn't actually thought
about
that.
We hadn't thought about it. But
I mean, to be fair, when we moved into the house, we converted the garage, didn't we? We brought it into the house.
Yeah.
But we heavily insulated it, and it's now part of the main house. You know, who needs
which
cars?
Makes my mum laugh, because I always said, we're going to have an underground cellar, and we're going to have this.
Yeah, I think your
and then run
budget,
out of money, yeah, and we just have a room.
So we have a room, but it is heavily insulated. It's not ideal. It does fluctuate a bit, but it's relatively stable over time as it fluctuates. So it works. You know, and we're not saying this to brag. It is our job. Most of our cellar is full of wine samples, which we're trying as part of the day job. But we also have a significant part of our own
collection. I think it's 50-50, really.
Collection.
You know, we've got samples and we've got...
But it's about context. You know, we've got a little bit of that fine wine, which will serve, you know, special guests.
Nice to have at home. And in terms of old world, new world, I think we've got a pretty pretty good mix, haven't we?
I think it's pretty eclectic, actually. You
know, old world, new world, classics offbeat. We worked out we've got a lot of Chardonnay, a lot of Syrah, and a lot of Pinot Noir, never enough fizz.
Yeah, we're always, I think it's because we drink it so far. You drink it so fast. We buy it, but then it goes straight away. Chardonnay, I don't think anyone listening to this podcast will be surprised by anything.
Thinking about that, you know, sparkling wine, fizz, traditional method sparkling wine, is a great shout for a home collection, because, you know, if you're buying a decent non-vintage, or even just an average non-vintage, if you leave that wine for 2 or 3 years, just sit on your hands, as it were, it will improve enormously, even a very ordinary non-vintage.
Well, I'd say buy a decent non-vintage, but you're absolutely right. This is a really good place to start. Okay, so at home wine collection, you know, wait for some really good, your favourite non-vintage champagne or whatever it is to be on offer.
Or English sparkling, or New World sparkling, if you like those.
Buy it in six, and then just leave it. And then you can. Well, the good thing about that is it's an ongoing thing. So you can then buy the next six and leave them.
Yeah.
And it just adds massive value to that wine when you enjoy it.
And actually, we would say if you get the chance to buy magnums of fizz, that's a lovely way forward as well. Or magnums of anything, frankly. I mean, you know, they are a bit annoying in terms of
magnums are really annoying in terms
them.
Of storage. But if you can find a place to store them, a magnum. You know, it just makes the party.
Yeah.
Magnum red, rosé, fizz. It's just absolutely brilliant. And they age better too, especially if your storage conditions are slightly warmer,
dodgy. We found a lot of sherry and port, didn't we?
Yeah.
What would we say about that?
I mean, neither of those are ideal options for an at-home wine collection, I think, really, because they're not really meant to age. So, certainly sherry doesn't need any aging. You're supposed to drink it straight away when you buy it.
Pretty much.
The other extreme, you know, something like vintage port needs more aging than really at-home aging can do. So I don't think it's going to do it justice.
So you'd be better keeping that professionally.
Exactly.
Exactly.
You know, have some nice dry fino or some tawny port, whatever. They're delicious. But, you know, actually the things you could probably keep are, in that context, are sweeter wines. You know, a nice Tokaj. Nice Sauternes,
so you've
nice
just
German
got
Riesling.
That when you and we don't open those kind of things very often, any of us.
No,
I don't
we really
think
don't.
But you know, when you've got a nice, you've cooked a nice supper for friends and you just want a little half bottle of something sweet at the end, then it's lovely to have that available.
Yeah, if you can.
Isn't it?
We've got a bottle of De Bortoli 83 Sauternes, haven't we, in there? Which
we
I came
have.
Across doing this.
Yeah, no, that is special.
That's something to look forward to. So let's move on. Whites.
Well, we had a real mix, and I think you should have a real mix in your cellar. Mm. I mean, there's nothing sort of rocket science about this. You know, we've got Sauvignon Blanc for refreshment and everyday drinking.
Yeah, we
do love Sauvignon, but we've equally got some slightly more complex ones, so those can be kept for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Riesling can be either drunk young or kept. Yeah. That's quite
we've
a nice
some
one to have.
We found, didn't we?
Hunter Semillon
was in there. Yep, quite a bit actually, more than we thought. What about moving on to richer ones?
Well,
you know, that's probably our play area.
That is our
well.
Area where Chardonnay. You know, we've got some lovely Chardonnay. A lot of New World favourites.
I think because we think it's such good value compared to Burgundy, and actually quite reliable.
So names that we would flag up are, you know, Vasse Felix Filius, which we've talked about a lot. Dog Point, Vidal Legacy, Kumu River, Giant Steps. You know, Steve Flamsteed's lovely
to
wines.
See all these wines in our cellar. England. Though, we've got to mention England in terms of Chardonnay. So we've got Kits Coty from Chapel Down going back. I think we've got pretty much every vintage.
I think we were missing one vintage, which is really annoying. We're missing 13, aren't we?
Right, we've got to get on to that. But Black Book.
Black Book from our lovely urban winery in London. And Gusbourne, you know, there's quite a few good English Chardonnays. Mm. And then, of course, Burgundy.
Yeah, we've got
now I'm going to mention one mistake we made here in buying. Oh, this is when six doesn't always work. So I bought some Antoine Jobard Bourgogne Blanc, and I bought a half case, six bottles, and it is stonking. Now we've got it at home and drunk it. I wish I'd bought 12.
That's the key problem. How do you get around that problem?
I think what you're going to do is buy six, open one immediately, and then if you really like it, just make sure you buy another six straight away. Because I think, you know, you don't want to miss out on those lovely wines. So that's sort of kind of our whites, isn't it?
And there's some old mints like Pure Pan Suave and Lasula
and bits and bobs that we've loved along the way.
So come on, the reds to finish off with reds. We've got some lighter stuff. Obviously, we love Pinot, and we got it from all over.
We have Germany, New Zealand, England, Burgundy, Australia. We've got it from all over Chile.
We've got quite a lot of fuller reds as well, actually, funny enough.
I think Rioja is quite good to have in your wine collection.
Yeah, Alex said Rioja was to me.
It's great. It tends to be ready to drink when you buy it, but equally it will age really nicely as well.
Exactly.
I don't think you can go very wrong with Rioja. Decent Rioja Reserva.
Decent's key though. Has to be really good.
Yeah.
Really. So we've got Ardanza, we've got Tondonia. Absolutely. They're the wines that will age once you've bought them.
Yeah.
And they're really, really good. Syrah.
Syrah. We just love Syrah, whether it's Côte Rôtie,
Hermitage, Crows. I don't think we buy lots of it. Do we drink it enough?
A lot of what we've got is quite savoury. So quite often, you know, this is a foodie thing. Quite often I'll be cooking something that's got pomegranate in it or, you know, fruitiness, or it's more suited to a wine with a red wine with a little bit more juicy sweetness. Not sweetness, but ripe fruit. And so that's where we sometimes slightly come unstuck, because our Rhone reds are quite savoury. So they suit more kind of roast lamb or a steak or whatever, or slow cooked stew.
Traditional foods.
Yeah.
If you eat fusion foods, your wine collection needs to go in that direction.
It's not definitive, but yes, I think there's an element.
If you're very classic, if you like a very traditional roast lamb, then actually those wines and claret and things like that might be better for you.
Which we do have as well.
Cru Beaujolais, I think, would be something to flag up as being brilliant value.
Yeah,
can age.
Yeah,
we've got a lot of Morgon Cote de Pie, haven't we?
Yeah.
We love that in our cellar, so don't forget about that, Steve.
Great for summer drinking as well.
Well, it can do both. Actually, it can be, if it's really complex. Actually, it works well in the winter too, and I think it's really undervalued. So you know, if you're thinking Burgundy, don't forget Cru Beaujolais.
Brunello.
Italy, we've got to say Italy.
We've got some Brunello
in our cellar.
I'd choose Brunello over everything.
There's wines
really
from all over. Etna Rosso, you know, obviously Barolos and stuff. You know, all of these things.
Yeah.
You can't forget Italy.
And they can stay in there and be rotated, can't they? Which I think we're
Mousar.
Looking for.
Now, Mousar. I want to throw Mousar in there. It's a must.
That's almost a must have
there's
in
no,
a cellar,
no,
isn't
there's
it?
No argument. Whenever we serve Mousar.
So Chateau Mousar from the Lebanon.
For people who don't know wine, it's always a hit. I know there are lots of people out there who don't like it, who say no. Well, try it, whatever. But you've got to buy a bottle. It's affordable.
Have it in your cellar,
and it's a party winner.
And then we have got a fair amount of Cabernet as well. We've got a reasonable
which is
amount
interesting
of Bordeaux.
For us, isn't it?
I know but I think we've got a fair amount of Cabernet because we don't drink much of it, so it just sort of stays there.
We have got
next
a lot
friends coming round. We're going to be serving you Cabernet.
We've also got some really. I mean, we've got some interesting Bordeaux. So a good example of the lesser wine and the good vintage. We've got some Eau de Pontécané 09. But we've also got some really interesting. We just bought the Lewin Art Series.
Yes,
and
we were Premier really impressed
Cabernet
recently
when we tried
with
that
them.
From Australia,
so that's Australian,
Margaret
yeah,
River. Margaret so River. Lots of that. We've got a Magnum of Nepenthe Cabernet Sauvignon 2000 from the Adelaide.
Given by them ages ago.
You know, so lots of stuff. And we've got some South Africa in there, some California, Grange de Pere, Malbec. There's quite an eclectic mix.
It's very eclectic.
When are we going to drink
this
stuff?
Goodness only knows.
Right.
anyway, hopefully that will have given you some ideas, Stephen, or maybe far too many ideas. And it's made us both very thirsty. So I think it's time to wrap up.
I think so. Yeah, thank you very much for the question, Stephen. If you would like to submit a question and star on the show, it's super easy. Just go to our website, susieandpeter.com/podcast, and click on the big orange SpeakPipe button. It's right there. Or, of course, you can just send us an email. We'd love to hear from you, if anything else.
Yeah, and if you've already contacted us with a question, thank you. We promise we will try to feature it very soon. Thanks to Nathan and to Alex. Don't forget Alex's special offer. And as ever, thanks to you for listening. Stay safe and cheers.